This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we're getting forward with the playoffs and we're in the Final Four. We're in conference finals mode. I can't believe it's already here. You know, once you get to the first round, you feel like, you know, the conference finals and the finals is like a month away, and it's, but then it finally kind of goes, breezes by, and once you actually get to the conference finals, things start to, I mean, if it hasn't already for some teams, you know, obviously with their seasons being over after being eliminated, it starts to really get cooking. But we're going to be breaking down all these matchups. I mean, there's only two, but there's so many different branches and, you know, tentacles to all these different things that I can't wait to really talk about them with my buddy and my co-host here, Adam Murray.
Hola.
I don't think I introduced myself, huh?
We all know who you are. We all know whose show this is. It's okay. You can be modest.
Am I the Durant to your Westbrook? Am I the Westbrook to your Durant?
It's more like you're the Durant to my Enes Kanter, Serge Ibaka or something.
But if you're the Enes Kanter, that means you got a way better mustache than me. So there's a plus there. So, every year with the conference final, let me just ask you this in general. You get to, everybody remembers who gets to the finals, even the ones that don't really perform well. Like in 07, the Cavs were god-awful and they got swept by the Spurs, but everyone remembers they got to the finals. Do you usually remember who gets to the conference finals? Like, for example, I say 2007. Do you remember who was in the conference finals that year against Cleveland and San Antonio?
No.
No?
It's just, you know, it's the old nobody remembers who finished second. You know, nobody, there's no banner for Eastern Conference, you know, finalists.
That's true, but for those teams, especially those fan bases, if they don't get back there, like the Nuggets in 09 and even the Rockets last year, for those teams, performances like these and getting this far is huge for them, correct?
Yeah, it's huge, but at the same time, nobody remembers that, you know, well, we remember it because of last year, but okay, the Rockets were in the finals last year, but all people remember is the Clippers epic collapse. And you could even say, well, did that happen in round one or round two? It doesn't matter. They melted.
Now that there's a best of seven in both rounds, now it's even harder to kind of like discern in your mind where it came from, you know, whereas in the 90s and in the 80s, you know, they were best of five. Some of them were in the early 80s. It was best of three, which I thought was insane. But that goes on. That's another story. But it was easier to kind of separate it. When you remember a best of seven, you knew, okay, it was either second round or it was the conference finals. Whereas now, since they expanded it to seven games in 03, now you can't even remember sometimes. There are some first round series that are more compelling than the second round. Did you feel the same way this year?
Kind of, yes and no, but you know, in the end, who are the teams that are going on? It's the big spenders. It's the luxury tax teams that are.
Yeah.
Three of the top four in the, you know, are the finals. The only missing team is our aforementioned melted Clippers. So it's just, well, those who don't care about paying the extra money on the back end, mm-hmm. they get the money from the extra revenue from the playoffs.
Yeah, and that includes some of the teams like the Spurs and even the Blazers spent a little bit to get to where they were. You know, so you know it's not always the biggest shock when you know teams that spend a lot get the furthest. You know, even the Hawks. Like we'll talk about the Hawks another day because they were the first team that got bounced in the second round. But you know it's a situation where you definitely have to spend some to get some. You know, you got to make moves. You know, they made a move for Tiago Splitter. They re-signed Paul Millsap. Now they got a big question with Al Horford. But you're right. You know, you got to go. You got to brush against your cap, and if you really, really want to be competitive, and there's a minimum. There's a basement there too with the spending. But it does seem like a lot of the teams that really go after it in the summer reaping the benefits of it later.
Well, yeah, those who just you know look at Oklahoma City. You know, for years, well, I refused to go over the, you know, to the luxury tax, I refused to go, and then now, all right, I'll pay for Kanter, now all of a sudden they're in the finals because they're they have a horribly, horribly big salary cap tax.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's going to be fun. I mean, what about the second round series? Was there one in particular that just sort of kept your eyes on? Was it, you know, Miami and Toronto? Was it Oklahoma City versus the Spurs? Even the Hawks, you know, just basically getting the shit kicked out of them again by Cleveland. Was there anything that sort of held your attention?
No, the only thing that was really just surprising was just the meltdown of the Spurs. And, you know, you could say what you want about, you know, the refs blowing really two games.
Well, the one in Game 5 was incredibly picky. Like, they're saying, oh, well, Kawhi was trying to intentionally foul Russell Westbrook, so they should have just called that so it would have been a three-point game with possession. First of all, I don't know if they would have even made that three to tie it. I mean, that's sort of a whatever situation. The one with Deion Waiters in Game 2 is a legitimate gripe.
The Game 5 is just like, even you call that in high school, it's just like, all right, we know he's fouling. It's, you know, it's, there's no secret what's going to happen right there. So it's just like, why all of a sudden you're going to let them play for that, you know, with 5 seconds to go? It's just like, huh?
But my point is, the Spurs weren't exactly on fire making a run in that last bit of that Game 5. In the Game 2, they were starting to click and making shots. So there was a good chance that if they had a little more time, or if they had, you know, they had called a violation and they had a break, they would have been able to make some kind of a shot. And it was a one-point game, too. Whereas if Russell Westbrook makes the free throws, they probably would have been down three. And I don't think the Spurs had made a basket like the previous two possessions, you know?
Oh, no. They, you know, Duncan seemed...
I don't want to call it a meltdown like you were saying, but it just seemed like the Spurs just didn't make very good adjustments. That's what it seemed like to me.
Well, basically, the Spurs didn't, you know, they just tried to, they didn't make it, yeah, they just did, well, this is Spurs basketball, this is what we do, and it wasn't enough, and, you know, you could say what you want, but, yeah, it was Westbrook and Durant. Billy Donovan didn't do anything there.
No.
I commented to you how he's basically marginalized Ibaka.
No, I think the team, I think the players just sort of rose to the expectations. You know, I thought the Kanter, Steven Adams, combination really, really hurt the Spurs when they would play lineups of Duncan and David West or Diaw and David West. It just seemed like that was a really bad matchup for the Spurs, and they never really tried to adjust to it. And when they did, it was too late, you know, because Kanter's shooting is so good, and Adams was just, he was just more physical and dirtier than any of the other bigs that the Spurs had. You know, and LaMarcus was, you know, Ibaka would come in, even though, you know, his minutes were curbed a bit. He would come in, he would defend Aldridge fairly well. You know, Aldridge didn't shoot the ball that great from game, I want to say, 4 on down. And then Kawhi Leonard defensively, I thought, had a lot of trouble, especially against Kevin Durant. I thought Kevin Durant had by far the best playoff series I've seen him.
No, I thought Leonard did fine. It was just... You know,
game 4, he got killed.
Was just one game, but for the most part, it was just, well, San Antonio re-upped with just old people on the bench with, you know, Andre Miller, Kevin Martin, and then you just have them sit the entire time, and, you know, there was no bench for them. And
Danny Green got the yips again.
Yeah.
That didn't help matters either. I mean, he's not overpaid at $10 million. You know, that was actually considered a discount for him, but man, he just did not. He did not perform in this finals. I mean, he's just he's an incredibly streaky player. He's almost like a J.R. Smith. Is that a pretty good comparison?
Well, that's what, if you're just a shooter, that's all you are. It's just, you know, what does he provide else?
Defensively, he's decent. He's not as good as people thought he was.
You know, if you're just decent, anybody can really be sort of decent and hang around in the league. So, again, if you're just primarily a shooter and you're not hitting, well, then, you know, you go from J.R. Smith to a Deion Waiters.
Yeah.
You know.
We're talking about this because, I mean, it was sort of a legitimate surprise that the 67-win San Antonio Spurs kind of... It wasn't just that they got eliminated by the Thunder, because the Thunder was an awesome team, too, but it was that... It was the way they lost. It was like the Game 5 was kind of so like, oh, whatever, I guess we're going to have to go to Oklahoma City. It wasn't – there was no urgency, Adam. It didn't seem like any urgency ever kicked in with San Antonio. And it was Oklahoma City that had them on their heels.
It looked like, you know, we're going to get to Game 7. We'll just, you know,
yeah,
salt them down. It will be fine. Don't worry. And, you know, like I said, they weren't out-coached. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, they looked their age finally. And
so you're jumping on the age bandwagon too with that storyline, that narrative? Because I felt like the experience was almost even between Oklahoma City and San Antonio in terms of, like, you know, seasons played. In terms of postseason experience, absolutely. The Spurs have an advantage over everybody, but, you know, I felt like it had more to – there wasn't a – I don't think age differential had that much to do with it. I think it had more to do with just offensive execution.
No, because this was the first time Duncan was ever held scoreless.
Yeah, that was game four. He had 0 points.
It was, you know, so you wouldn't expect that ever. So, like I was saying, it just seems – you know, he was just running on fumes, and, you know, Parker and Ginobili, they give us what they give us, and there was just nobody around them, and, you know, again, you have old man David West and all the other, but, you know, bench people who didn't play.
Yeah, I love David West, but he just played too much. He played too much for his age. Like, I was watching, like, why is David West getting so many minutes? I thought that might be, I mean, we'll talk about them for Netflix and chill for, like, you know, a next episode when we talk about the Spurs and Western Conference playoff teams, but it seems like they definitely need another younger big guy to really back them, especially if Duncan retires, which nobody knows. The only one who knows that is really Timmy. I don't even think Popovich knows.
Nah, nobody knows, and it's just going to be... I don't even know if it'll be a storyline, because I don't know if people really care that much anymore.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about Duncan. That's been his whole career, that people kind of like... that people pay attention to him, but he doesn't attract the attention. You know, even this past summer when he signed the 2-year deal with the option, no one really cared. Like, it was kind of like, okay, well, I guess he's taking a pay cut. Now I think there's going to be a little bit more of a magnifying glass on what he does or what he's thinking, because this really might be it. And everybody's got the obsession of, is this his last game? Is this the last time we'll see Tim Duncan? You know, so you know, there's that intrigue there. I think no matter what, regardless of what they do, I think Ginobili and Duncan, if they're back, next year would be the last year. You know, there's a rumor out there that Manu Ginobili is going to retire after he plays for Argentina in the Olympics.
That makes sense. He looked done like 2 years ago.
Ginobili got killed by Deion Waiters. That was the other shocker of that playoff series, how well Deion Waiters played.
And it's not real. Well, when you have zero expectations on you, it's like, oh, he's playing. Who knew?
Okay, and so we're talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder, which is a good primer here because we're going to start with the Western Conference Finals. The Oklahoma City Thunder, this is going to be their fourth Western Conference Finals in 6 years. You can't call that a dynasty because you've only made the finals once. But what can you call that? What kind of, like, how magnanimous of a run is that?
You can just call it a statistic, and that's pretty much it. You know, you make it to the finals, all right. That's because you have two of the top five best players in the league, probably. So,
would you say 5 or 10? I've heard it thrown around 5, top 10. I've heard it in different ways from different.
Yeah, it depends on, you know, who. You know, at least top 10, top 5 to some. It's
Durant is absolutely top five. Absolutely.
Durant's top 3.
Mm-hmm. And then for Westbrook, it's hard. It
depends, you know, depends how you rank him. Some people are really high on him. Those who are low on him, that they can easily, you know, those who don't like him, okay, he's still top 10.
If you're a PER stat guy, yeah, Russell Westbrook's like your number one. You know, him, Curry, Durant, and LeBron. But then you go into the, well, you know, the more the figurative, well, how good of a basketball player is he? Does he make teammates better and blah, blah, blah? Then people can kind of point at his game and see flaws, and they'd rather pick Paul over him, rather pick Curry over him. But, you know, it goes without saying, you're right. You have two of the best players in the NBA on the planet Earth, and so you should be able to make that work. So maybe a lot of people had that expectation from Billy Donovan in his first coaching season of, well, of course you got to the finals, you should have, but beating the Spurs is an incredible accomplishment.
Yeah, it didn't, but like I said, did he outcoach them? No, it just seems you just used your talent and the whole, you know, it's the whole season's just been, all right, I'm just going to give it to these two guys and we'll go as what we can, and now... And now here we are.
Now, under Scottie Brooks, you know, he was heavily criticized as well. He's now coaching with the Wizards. But the thing about Billy Donovan that I was always trying to pinpoint the difference between Billy Donovan and Scotty Brooks, and a lot of people make fun of him saying that he basically is Scotty Brooks in disguise. But truthfully, watching the Thunder, the one thing I definitely noticed under Billy Donovan that's different, they play team defense a lot better. You know, now it doesn't hurt. I will say that the fourth quarter meltdowns are still very alarming. Like, they had a huge 25-point lead to open the fourth quarter in Game 6, and they had whittled that down to, what, 8, 9, or 7? And you started kind of getting that scare, like, when the Clippers played the Rockets, like, oh, no, this might happen again. But so that's incredibly alarming how they just kind of melt down at the end of the games in the fourth quarter. But defensively, I feel like the Thunder are just a tad better than they were ever under Brooks.
Well, yeah, because... Well, yeah, they're different because, like I said, there's Ibaka's gone. Now you have the Cantor Adams thing, and you move some things around. But for the most part, are they really different? No. Westbrook just runs in, charges, and hopes to get a free throws, and Durant just hits every shot.
The Thunder live at the free throw line, and it ain't just Durant and Westbrook. There's Cantor gets to the free throw line a decent bit. Deion Waiters is an attacking guard. Ibaka gets his free throws. I mean, they live at that line. I think they're averaging over 25 made free throws a game, or maybe 21, which is the best of the postseason teams.
Yeah, but that's their. They're pretty much the only one with that style of play.
Yeah,
that
and then
reckless abandon charge.
And then rebounding, they're always in the tops. Like they've been tops in rebounding for like 3 or 4 years. So them being a great rebounding team is not a shock. They use that to their advantage against the Spurs for sure. They out rebounded them in most of the games. There's definitely holes. The one thing about the three teams in the West that we kept talking about between the Thunder, the Spurs, and then obviously the opponent that they're going to have in the Western Conference Finals, the Golden State Warriors. The Thunder were clearly the ones with the most holes. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Okay. More than the Clippers?
The Clippers didn't have holes. They just had mental issues and injuries.
Lack of depth, too.
Yeah.
I thought lack of depth really got them, too. So they're going to be facing the Golden State Warriors, who now are going to be bringing back into the fold Steph Curry. Are you shocked he won? Let's go off the track a second. Are you shocked that he won the unanimous MVP, the first ever unanimous MVP in NBA voting history?
Actually, yes.
Why?
I thought there'd be one bonehead reporter who would be, one bonehead person be like, oh, no, this person should get one vote.
Do you remember in 2000 when Shaq had the one excluded vote, who that vote was?
No, who?
It was Allen Iverson, who actually won the MVP the following year, and nobody really argued against it. Even though I could honestly, Adam, make a case that from 2000 to 2002, Shaq probably should have won every MVP.
Probably, but
that's not how it works. It's a popularity contest. And then in 2013, LeBron came a vote short. Do you remember who that was, that lone vote?
He won
the scoring title.
No, who was it?
Carmelo Anthony had one of his best years with the Knicks, and he got a first-place vote.
Yeah, first-place. And then, what was it, 2013? Like, didn't Ty Lawson get one vote in 2013? It's just, always somebody gives a vote to a random person, so... it was just like you're expecting, with this, even the what was it, Chris Broussard, like this stupid player rankings he has, like, did LeBron catch up this week? It's like, no, he statistically had the best season ever, ever. There's no reason he shouldn't be it, but you'd always expect bonehead.
He was in the top 25 in field goal percentage as a 6'2" guard. That's insane. It's insane. Most big men can't shoot over 50%.
Yeah, and he was hitting, half-court shots like they were layups.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we kind of had that over-under of whether it would be two games or one game, how many he played in the second round. It turned out to be two. He actually came off of – if you want to cheat, you can't say he started the two games because he came off the bench in game four, which turned out to be this blisteringly, high-scoring game where the Warriors won 132 to 125 in overtime. Curry scored 17 in overtime. Were you watching that game thinking, okay, Curry's got his groove back?
No. Because he didn't he start off with a game four game five? He started off like one for.
Yeah, he started his first three was an air ball. You know, he was struggling in the early part. He was like at one point from three, he was like 1 for 7, and then he got going in the overtime.
Yeah, so there's no point. See, he was back. It was just, you know, like we had said, he'll come back when he's needed, and then, all right, we need to close one out in, you know, the very tough Portland.
Portland, you know, we're not going to talk about them much because obviously they're gone, but Portland gave a lot of fight in that series. I really thought that they fought hard in that series, especially those last two in Golden State, Game 2 and Game 5. I thought they... I mean, Portland, the Moda Center is a really hard place to win. It is. I mean, the Clippers found that out the hard way. But you know, did Portland get a break with the injuries to Paul and Griffin? Yes, for sure. But they definitely played a lot harder than I expected them to. I thought they would roll over against Golden State, but they didn't.
They didn't, but they got as far as, you know, we expect. They played tough, obviously the home court advantage, like you said, but... They had no front court in that one game. Well, there's nothing you could do if Al Farouq Aminu goes 8 for 9 and like 7 for 8 on threes. There's nothing.
He is the perfect situation of a signing that makes your head go, what? And then you watch him in on that team, the way he fits, and you're like, well, you know, if it works for them and they feel like he has value, then good for them. I guess.
You know, hey, they're happy. We're not going to. You know, still is like, okay, why? But, you know, if you have one of those games where, you know, some random player goes off, well, it's going to be one of those nights. And for the most part, it was. They had zero, you know, from their bigs. Can't call Aminu a big.
No, he's a stretch four at this point. Or like a defensive.
He's just a 3-and-D.
Yeah, he's a 3-and-D, I guess you could call him. But he can play the four if you want him to. But we saw a whole lot of Ed Davis. Sometimes on bad switches, I saw Ed Davis on Steph Curry, which is like, that should never happen. You know what I'm saying? So defensively, not the greatest team in the world.
Yeah, sure. It's just like, oh, Ed Davis, you never... We always hoped you'd be something better, but you just never got that. Never got there.
No, they've got. I mean, we're not gonna be talking too much about the Warriors now, but you know they got, you know, with Plumlee, you know, with Aminu there, Alan Crabb is a free agent. They got some decisions to make, but a really, really nice, solid starting roster. You know, they just need to build the bench up a little bit more, play some more of those guys, play Vonleh, maybe Pat Connaughton a little more, so that they could try to strengthen things from within. It'll be fun, but we're talking about Golden State now. Golden State. If you want to really do the comparison with that 96 Bulls team, the Bulls had one loss going into the conference finals, and that was against the Knicks in overtime. I remember that game in the second round. They had beaten the Heat 3-0, and then they swept. Everybody remembers, especially watching that. Did you watch the most recent 30 for 30 ESPN documentary about the Orlando Magic, this magic moment?
No.
Really, really good. You know, 30 for 30s are usually pretty compelling. Good documentary filmmakers, good production companies. And that one was pretty good, and everybody remembers now that the Bulls swept the Magic that year. What do you see here with Golden State and Oklahoma City? They had one of the funnest regular season games you'll ever see on ABC. It was one of the one ABC games where you're like, okay, this fits the primetime bill. When Curry hit the shot in overtime from basically right past half court. To win the game. What are you expecting here? Do you see like a whole lot of up and down, a whole lot of fun?
Well, there's no reason that these scores shouldn't be 120 to 118 every. I don't see a lot of defense happening anywhere.
Yeah, but remember the Rockets and the Warriors were both really fast-paced teams and they both scored a lot of points, but the series wasn't fun really because the Warriors won the first three games and then Curry got the injury in the game four. And then game five, the Golden State Warriors closed it out, and nobody really remembered it. You know, it's got to be close, and there's got to be some sort of, like, moment of truth for both teams in order for people to – in order to make a series memorable, regardless of how many points are scored, especially in this era where everybody seems to be scoring points. Look at the freaking Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, they're making a million threes a game. So what do the Warriors and the Thunder have to do to make this a compelling series? Do the Thunder have to steal one out of Golden State?
Probably.
But is it possible?
I don't see, you know, like I've said, if I don't see it happening and everything, you know, the Bane game will be game three. Mm-hmm. If they don't show up for game three, if the if the Thunder are going to steal one, it would be game one. It wouldn't be game two.
You think game – so, yeah, game one's going to – the whole series is going to be on TNT. We can make a debate later of who got the better end of the network slate. But Russell Westbrook, the one thing I love about that guy is that regardless of whether or not he turns the ball over a lot, and he does, and whether or not he, you know, how many holes he has in his game in terms of, you know, pacing and timing and slowing games down at the right times. And he definitely has issues with that, even though statistically he's like a god. But he is not scared. No matter what it is or who you put up against him, it could be Michael in his prime, it could be Elgin Baylor, it could be LeBron James, it could be Steph Curry. It doesn't matter to him. He is not scared. So how do you feel Russell should play against a Steph Curry who can kind of be maddening to play against at times because he's so efficient offensively? And defensively, Curry's pretty underrated, and he's got a whole lot of help behind him with Sean Livingston and even Draymond Green, who can guard sometimes. Like, what should be the mindset of Russell Westbrook? Just attack?
It doesn't matter because that's what he's going to do. He's going to say, it's me against him. You know, although your best bet for really Oklahoma is they should probably go inside since Bogut is a little banged up. And I don't even know if
he got a little hamstring issue. I don't even know if he's playing in game one.
Yeah, so now you have no – you're going to go with Festus Ezeli and or you're going to go small. You know, you can't go small against the Thunder.
Well,
so,
that's the beauty of Draymond Green. You can play him at the five and get away with it. You know, that's the death lineup. Green is the center in the death lineup.
You can, but who are you going to put at the four then?
Well, you put Barnes and you just hold out hope. But if you play Cantor and Adams, you're right. You got issues.
That's the thing is you can't put Barnes on Cantor or even if they, you know, Ibaka, mm-hmm. Ibaka and Adams or Ibaka and Cantor, you can't put Harrison Barnes out there and have him.
But here's the thing too. The Golden State Warriors are renowned for starting out hot and kind of giving you that punch to the face early, especially at home. At home, they love to do that so that they can try to, you know, kind of, you know, simmer you down in the second half, and then they can just go crazy. The thing with the Cantor is that he comes off of the bench a lot. You know, they play Robertson at the two spot along with Durant, and then they have Ibaka and Adams sometimes. You know, so if they have Ibaka out there and the Warriors play small, I can see the Warriors getting away with Barnes on Ibaka for just a little while. But if they start Cantor or if they play Cantor like 30 minutes, even 35 minutes, yes, I think they have some matchup advantages in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, but again, all matchup advantages and all advantages in general are negated when you're just hitting 40-foot jumpers like their layups.
Yeah. Now, Kevin Durant, obviously, he's always kind of given the business to Golden State in terms of statistics. But, you know, in the games where – because those all three of the games that they played, I believe except for one, were kind of tight. You know, two of them were on ABC. One was Golden State right – I think it was right before the Super Bowl, right? Because they made a big deal out of how – Curry played that game, and then the next day he was out in Santa Clara for the Super Bowl introducing the Panthers because he's a huge Panthers fan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was that game, and then there was the one in Oklahoma City. And obviously the one in Oklahoma City was a thriller, but the first one was kind of tight too. And Durant went off in that game too. But he doesn't really close out the way Curry does. And Klay Thompson has really played well. That's another thing. Last year, I felt like Thompson sort of had a free ride, especially in the finals. In the Portland series, Klay Thompson was fantastic.
Yeah, he's been, well, we'd always keep mentioning every time, you know, he was always the weak link in previous series due to his streakiness, but he seems to be on a roll right now.
And then there's obviously Draymond Green. I mean, where would you put Draymond Green sort of in the pantheon of players today? Like, would you put him, like, in the top 10, in the top 20?
Of current?
Yes.
He's between 10 and 20.
Yeah, he's terrific. I mean, you got three of the best, you know, we talk about two of the best five players, maybe. But the Warriors have, like, what, three of the best 20?
Yeah.
And maybe the best bench player in the NBA in Andre Iguodala?
I don't know about that. I don't know. He's just, you know, by the time he comes in, you know, they're usually already up by five or seven, so a lot easier playing with a lead than having to come in off the bench and all of a sudden, you know, try to start a rhythm.
Do you see a lot of Iguodala on Durant here?
I think you have to.
Because remember, they had Thompson on Harden in the conference finals last year, and Harden started to go off on him, and then they had to force double teams and force him to turn the ball over. Durant is sort of prone to turnovers too. You know, he loves to dribble into traffic, and it sort of cost him in that Spurs series a couple of times. Do you see a lot of gang defending against Durant here, or do you think they're going to go man to man?
I think they're going to start off man to man and just, you know, let him, if he starts getting into his rhythm, because there's no, you know, there's no guarantee you're just going to let, you know, Westbrook. I assume Westbrook's just going to be on the it's Westbrook versus the world mode. Oh, I have a Durant here, but mm-hmm. I need to go try to charge it through all the time. Need to try to make 10 threes, even though I can't make any.
I know. I think Bill Simmons said in one of his podcasts that they had a stat where Russell Westbrook was like had the worst 3-point percentage among playoff performers that had a minimum of like 100 3-point attempts in a postseason. Like he had one of the lowest of all the players, along with Charles Barkley. Like it's like he loves to take threes, but he just can't make them. I don't know if he ever was able to make them.
That's why, you know, we had, you know, I keep mentioning to you, you're like, how great Westbrook is. And I'm like, you know, he is not going to age gracefully.
You almost said it.
You know, there's going to be a steep cliff because he can't hit the long shots. And when he loses a step, he's just going to be done. He's not going to be like Chris Paul where, yeah. All right, I need to become a better passer.
I call it the Kevin Johnson wall. You know, or the cliff. That's what happened to Kevin Johnson. Like, he went from one of the two or three best point guards in the NBA to nothing. You know,
and that's the thing is you have to, once your speed goes away, you need to, you know, compensate for something. And I don't see, thanks to his, you know, his fearlessness, if he gets an injury or that his legs start going, he's just going to go full on Deron Williams. And
yeah.
Just...
Now the Warriors do foul a lot. So the Thunder getting in the free throw line will not be a shock. So Westbrook being on the attack isn't the worst idea, but here's the thing. They're not going to call a foul on every single, you know, dribble penetration that Westbrook goes into. So what it is that is Westbrook going to be kind of falling into the Warriors' hands by trying to speed things up and sort of abandoning half-court play because it makes the pace go up? Or is Westbrook and the Thunder kind of familiar with that themselves because they play at one of the fastest paces in the league as well. So is it sort of a situation where you're playing the strengths of both teams so it doesn't neither team can have a real advantage?
Well, the thing with the Warriors is they beat you by getting you not to play your game. You're busy trying to play Warrior ball.
That's true, but this kind of is the Thunder's game.
Not really. All you gotta do is just kick it out, and you know, there's no. You don't need to just try to barrel it in and then hurl up a shot and hope it go. You know, and hope you get a foul. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, simple dribble penetration, kick it out. Durant's on the wing, bam, easy three. It just basically come down to is will Westbrook try to take over and go for a triple double, or is he gonna try to play smart for once?
And then what about the bigs here? Because, I mean, we didn't really – you talked a little bit about Azeli and Bogut, and I'm forgetting a couple of the others. You know, they have Maurice Spates, who sort of likes to take threes. But they're a very, very underrated front court crew as well, you know, along with Draymond Green, of course. But what kind of advantages do the Warriors have? Is it just the fact that they have a lot of fouls to throw at them in case they need somebody else that can chip in offensively in case someone gets in foul trouble?
Well, they got fouls, and who's really their stiffest big man? Varejao, and he's a nimble guy.
Well, Bogut literally is the stiffest.
well, just because of age and injuries, but he's not like a slow moving, you know.
No, he's got great mobility, and he's pretty agile in terms of his footwork. I'll say that for Andrew Bogut for sure.
So they got, you know, their bigs still move around, so it's not like you're stuck with, you know, the old school relic where, all right, we need to put him down low and, you know, Tim Duncan, well, he's going to sit there and he's not going to move. So he's just not going to move.
And then obviously Oklahoma City. Now they dropped the game to Dallas. Like how they lost that game, I still have no idea. Have you figured out why how they lost that game? 86-85.
You could say conspiracy to get.
Hey, what's the conspiracy so that they could blow them out in Dallas twice? You know.
We need another home game just to get, some more revenues to offset our luxury tax costs.
That was the one where Durant went like 7 for 31 or something like that.
Yeah, they just weren't trying.
And then they lost game 3, which is the game where I thought, and a lot of people conventionally thought, okay, San Antonio's back in it. They got the home court back. It's kind of like order is restored. And then it turned out not to be the case. But the story behind that is that the Thunder have dropped home games in the playoffs, whereas in Golden State it's like having a root canal trying to get a road win out of Golden State. So do you see Golden State having trouble getting a win out of Oklahoma City?
No.
Like what kind of advantage would they have playing over there at Chesapeake?
I don't really see Oklahoma City as one of those, super home court advantages.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Miami where there's just like there's no home court. It's average.
Yeah, and they've lost a road game. Like their road record's excellent too for Oklahoma City, but the one they lost was that game one where they got just destroyed by 32 points. So we know that Oklahoma City has a tendency to mentally check out if things get rough in the early on in the game. So do you think that's going to be the game plan for the Warriors, just kind of like giving them the big old uppercut early on, see if they can survive it?
Pretty much.
Okay, and now we're going to be talking about the Eastern Conference Finals. The Cleveland Cavaliers, weren't they in the Eastern Conference Finals? Like, weren't they put in there maybe like at the beginning of last year?
And basically it's going to be the same again. I don't know what you want to say about this finals matchup because you have the best team who's healthy and running on all cylinders versus just teams who have just been, attrition. And, the first round, Detroit gave them a good fight. But, like we said, easy 4 win. Atlanta just was the Atlanta we expected them to be. That, able to know it's going to be tough.
Let's talk about that a little bit because we do need a little bit of context to Cleveland's run here. You talked about how Detroit sort of was competitive with them and they were, but it was a 4-game sweep, and then that felt to me, Adam, that felt like Armageddon for the Atlanta Hawks. That felt like. You remember when Shaq said that he wished Chris Webber. Remember when they swept the Kings, and he said he wished Chris Webber would sign with another team, and that the Kings would go back to expansionism. And everyone got that word expansionism for a while. It felt like the Hawks are going back to expansionism with that game. They're like literally a year away from all of their free agents kind of walking away and them having to reboot the entire team. And it felt like this was like the last gasp for them after they beat the Celtics in 6. And then the Cavs just fucking curb stomped them. It was ugly.
It was everything we expected it would be. It was just a team that was really one-dimensional. Yeah, they beat the Celtics, who were injured and, young. And then all of a sudden, well, what do you have? How do you match up against Cleveland? Oh, we don't. Well, we can shoot threes.
But they're more talented than us.
Yeah, and it's just like Cleveland's just like, okay, you can shoot threes. Well, we're going to beat you using your method.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, too. They're all making threes. It's not like it's not like all of a sudden the Cavs decided, okay, we're going to make a bunch of threes. They were a really good three-point shooting team anyway. But the thing is, they went from making 10.3 threes a game to making, 18, which is, 16 or 18, which is ridiculous. I mean, 16 to 18 made threes per game in the playoffs is, it's not even fair. It's not even fair. They broke the record with, I think it was 20 in a game.
Yeah,
and then it got broken by the Warriors for 21, and then they did 25 and 20 in back-to-back games against the Hawks. I mean, some people would say that the Hawks just got railroaded by a team that was red hot shooting the ball, but I mean, there's something to be said about the fact that you played basically the same team twice and you got run over both times in two different ways.
Again, yes, but it's just the same way as you losing to your finishing move.
Mm-hmm.
When Shawn Michaels beat Bret Hart with the sharpshooter, that's just what it is. It was just
that was not that, first of all, the referee that was fixed. the referee was told to call the bell.
Just move on. What, 20 years ago? 19 years ago? It's been... Mm-hmm. It's been a long time. Just move on. But...
Well, even Shawn and Brett have moved on. The fans are just... Yeah. Okay. Let's keep going.
Like I said, it was just... Atlanta couldn't match up. All they could do was just shoot threes, and then Cleveland was just, well, we're going to beat you using your method. We're not going to even, you know, they took more threes than they did twos, and you're like, oh, well, they're 2-point shootings down. It's like, well, yeah, if you're taking threes the whole time, all you're taking, the ones you're missing are probably 3-pointers with your foot on the line.
Is there a bigger picture here with LeBron James? We know he's coached LeBron. We know Tyronn Lue's coaching the team, and maybe he's getting credit for the wins, obviously, because he's the head coach by name. But we know that sort of LeBron is running this team. He's sort of the one that's facilitating everything. He's the one that's controlling where the offense goes, where the defense goes. Do you feel like LeBron is sort of trying to subtly prepare Cleveland for the Golden State series, potentially?
To an extent.
I mean, I'm not saying he's looking ahead. I'm saying that he's trying to prep the offense for that scenario so that when they play them, they're ready this time.
Yeah, these are just like sparring matches on the way to on the way to the top. They haven't, you know, the first two rounds there was no need to take seriously. And really, this one, is there a need to take seriously again? No, because there's nothing left. You know, Toronto and Miami just beat the living daylights out of each other. And if they have no starting centers on either side, what can you possibly achieve?
This one's going to be the Toronto Raptors, who just squeaked by the Miami Heat. And this is the second time they've gone seven games. The Heat went seven games as well. You know, they beat Charlotte in the first round, and then they had this one. We sort of predicted that. I think I put that in my one of my little bylines when I did the description on one of the episodes. I said that this one, they might have to go seven games again, and it turned out that's exactly what it is. And, you know, for some teams... You know, especially for Toronto, because they had gotten such a knock on them that they just weren't mentally ready for the postseason, and it definitely showed in the Miami series that they weren't at times. But the thing is, you get all this attrition, like you said, and you go seven games with a Pacers team that's got a star player in Paul George who's gone pretty far, and you win. And then you go seven games with a really experienced Miami Heat team that's got a truly great player in Dwayne Wade, and you win. And now you really got a lot on your backlog. You've got a lot of experience that you can tap back into against Cleveland. But let's be serious here. How much of that helps you, and how much of that hurts you?
I don't.
I mean, different teams react to it. You know, we've seen teams where... They went seven. I always say this example. 98, the Bulls went seven games with the Pacers in a really tough series. And the Jazz swept the Lakers, like, very easily. Then they get to the finals. Everyone's like, well, the Jazz are rested and they're ready. And the Bulls beat them anyway. You know, I mean, how much of that really factors in?
The rest doesn't factor in at all anymore these days. These guys have been playing, four games in five nights over the season, usually game every other day on average.
I think it only factors in if there's a string of really close games that go into overtime. And these did go to overtime between the Heat and the Raptors.
Yeah, because nobody wanted to win.
You really feel that way about the Heat-Raptors series? Was it that boring for you?
It was just you're waiting for a team to lose. There was the whole series was just
But you said the same thing about the Pacers and the Raptors.
Which was true.
So you're saying the Raptors are the last team to not lose?
The Raptors are just, you know, they're winning despite, you know, they're trying every which way to lose by not being able to shoot, play calls.
Very inefficient offense, for sure.
The
injury to Jonas Valanciunas really hurt them for the rest of that series. How much would you expect them in this upcoming series, though?
I expect a four-game sweep as quick as you can say it.
Wow, you're really like... Now, you know, Cleveland, a lot of people felt this way in 09, and then the Magic got them. Obviously, different scenario, different lineups, different coaches, all that stuff. I mean, is there any scenario here where you see Cleveland sort of taking Toronto for granted and Toronto surprises them.
With who? Bismack Biyombo and Jason Thompson as their bigs?
Well, depending on Valanciunas and how healthy he is, you know. We even saw a little bit of Lucas Nogueira in one of those games against Miami, shockingly.
Yeah, which doesn't really, you know, help you.
That must mean that Dwayne Casey really hates James Johnson, because he played James Johnson a lot last year, and now he refuses to play him. He is like banner toggle waiver now.
Yeah, and, you know,
his future's not bright in Toronto. He must be in the doghouse.
He must have been one of the assistant coaches' favorite, because there's just, you know, they have no, there's no bench on the team. They're not really, I don't need to mention they're shooting, but there's no bigs, and what are you going to do? Who are you going to put on LeBron, and who are you going to put on Kevin Love?
I think they might get desperate enough that if Damari Carroll has trouble with LeBron, they might put Norman Powell on him.
That's just, you know.
Very bad potentially. But, I mean, you know, let's get to the mechanics of this. You know, you got Kevin Love at the power forward spot. That's immediately going to be a problem for Toronto, because Bismack Biyombo does not like to go out there. Patrick Patterson, you can sort of play him at the stretch four. But, you know, Kevin Love is basically, if you agree with me here, like a better, more advanced version of Patrick Patterson. Am I right?
Well, that's just really an insult to Kevin Love, because Patrick Patterson isn't anybody.
But Patrick Patterson's a big who likes to pick and pop, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but he's not very good. He's just
Kyrie Irving, Kyle Lowry, that's kind of a push at times. It depends on Lowry's shooting. You know, we've seen some games where he was on fire, and then we had some games where, you know, game six in particular, where he just wasn't really great. You know, and DeRozan, I mean, that goes without saying. That's the one part where I think the Raptors can have an advantage, is that it's at that two spot. You know, J.R. Smith defensively, we already know his issues. Iman Shumpert can be up and down defensively sometimes. You remember we saw Kentavious Caldwell-Pope go off a couple of times against Cleveland at the two spot. What do you see here with DeMar DeRozan? I mean, he's just, you know, in all those games, even the closeout game, you're just never sure, you know, about DeMar DeRozan, how well he can play. Even in the games where he closes out teams and he gets a lot of points, it's all at the free throw line for the most part. His shooting has just been abysmal. So how well does DeRozan have to play in order for this to be a series?
He needs to have the best game ever, but I've been saying every series and for years, I don't think his shooting is the problem. It's just his shot selection. Every shot he makes is terrible. And
he's allergic to the three-point line. That's just not his game. He loves to go right under. But the defenses have figured out how to stretch him about 20 feet back and put him in bad spots, or trouble spots, you could call them.
Yeah, they put him in trouble spots, and that's just bad shot selection. It's not bad shooting. It's just...
Yeah, but that's true. You know, you'd have that ability to pivot and take the shot. But if you do it in a trouble spot, then all of a sudden, you know, the offense dies, and that's where that usage rate goes up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a really, really, really tough stuff. I mean, they have one of the highest usage rates in the league. Cleveland sort of did too under LeBron. LeBron infamously had like the highest usage rate ever when he was in the finals against Golden State. Everything went through him. But the difference here is that LeBron is so good at just spreading everything out, and he's not at a point anymore in his career where he wants to go for 30 and 40 points. If he has to, he will, but he just doesn't. You know, do you feel like there's a little bit – how much of that – this is more of a philosophical question. How much of that, in your eyes, Adam, is LeBron sort of slowing down, or LeBron reserving himself for when they really need him?
Oh, I think it's just him slowing down.
Okay.
Which we both mentioned it has happened, and just – you could say it's reserve, but if you're slowing down, you automatically know you don't have that reserve towards.
So you're saying reserving, that he's reserving himself because he's slowing down.
Yeah, and there's no reason to go full out if you have your two teammates who are healthy, as opposed to last year. Oh, his usage rate was the highest ever because who was on the team with him? It was him and
Tristan Thompson. Yeah, they got desperate, because, especially after the broken kneecap by Kyrie Irving. You know, injuries can always factor in any series, and, you know, they're unforeseeable. And Cleveland is the one. The irony with Cleveland is that they're the team that's sort of skirted by, whereas the previous season they were sneak bit big time. Is the other shoe going to eventually drop for Cleveland here?
It hasn't yet. Yeah, granted, it could happen at any time, but even if it does, this series won't provide. It won't have to take, you know, two major devastating injuries to their big three to for something to really happen. And even then, you could say Kevin Love goes down. All right, you have Tristan Thompson. It's just there. Move LeBron to the four. Nothing
and
changed.
You have Channing Frye as basically like a low-ranked Kevin Love. Not saying he's as good as Kevin Love, okay? We're not doing this again.
He's just Kevin Love insurance.
Yeah, exactly. And he bailed him out big time, I think, in one of those games against the Hawks. Am I right? No, game three? I think he had 27 on 7 of 9 shooting for three.
Yeah,
you know, that's a really great luxury to have. You know, like a guy who can make seven 3-pointers right off of the bench. The other stat that I always keep going back to about Toronto, and it just scares the. If you're a Toronto fan, you want to cover your ears, is that they were second to last in the NBA in 3-point field goal percentage defense, and they got a little bit lucky with the matchups they got because you know the 3-point percentage for Miami. And the Pacers was sort of middle of the pack to bad. So they sort of got away from that, and they didn't – I mean, Josh Richardson and Joe Johnson and even Dwayne Wade were making threes, but they weren't like splurging all over them, you know what I'm saying? And the Pacers, they had Paul George, but after that, it was sort of wishy-washy with the three-point shooting between Monte Ellis and George Hill and CJ Miles. They just didn't get consistent production. The Cavaliers are going to get consistent production. And that's going to be the one.
But also, that stat's a little one-sided because, you know, they didn't have Carroll, and you're just relying on Terrence Ross for the entire season, who doesn't really wow anybody with his defense. So, of course, you're going to, you know, the numbers will be skewed if your top defender guy, your top wing defender, your only wing defender isn't there.
Yeah, and Lowry being so small kind of hurts them, too, on the perimeter defense because you want your point guard to hedge. You know, so that, you know, you could try to keep him in front of whoever is trying to penetrate so that he doesn't, so that, you know, your guard doesn't wind up behind, the defender doesn't wind up behind the guard creating the offense. That's the last thing that any of these guys want on these ball screens. So they do everything they can to keep the guard in front of them, even if it means you ignite a pick and roll, you know, but that all comes down to execution. The Cavaliers, in terms of offensive execution, Adam, I got to say, they might be playing better than the Warriors are in terms of just, like, hitting point A to point B.
Well, again, if you're playing with, you know, look at the level of competition they've both been playing with. You have a feisty Trailblazers team versus an Atlanta team who just didn't do anything at all. So
you're saying that even if the Cavaliers win the series, they'll be in for a rude awakening in June?
Yes.
Okay.
I think they already knew sort of, this looks to be an easy way, too, so let's, you know, sort of practice our points now in these games so we would be ready, as opposed to let's just breeze through and we'll use our talent at the end. It's just, like, so, I said, this is sort of practice.
So you see a sweep here?
You don't?
Man, no team sweeps their way all the way through the conference playoffs ever. I think there was only one team that did it, or actually there was two. There was the Lakers in 89. And there was the Lakers in 2001. It rarely, rarely happens. I think they'll lose one. I think Toronto will get one at home.
Okay, so a 5-game series is not really much different. So.
In this case, no. I would probably say the Cavs in 5 and on to the finals they go back. And also, you can't bet against LeBron in the Eastern Conference Finals. What is he since 2011? He's like 5-0?
It's just
like you. I mean, and I think they've gone 7 twice in that era. Like, you know what? Let's talk about the LeBron ones. Here we go. We got 2011. That was the Bulls one that went 5 games. When Derrick Rose was the MVP. 2012 was that epic one with the Celtics. Was that your favorite one?
He was on fire that one, yes.
Well, that was the one where I know it's a sore spot for you, I guess, but that was the one where LeBron sort of woke up. Is that okay? I'm done with the fucking Celtics. I'm ending them now. You know, it was sort of where he woke up from that playoff that presumption that he was like a playoff choker, I guess, and he kind of got out of that slumber and all of a sudden he was unstoppable. And then 2013 was the 7-game one with the Pacers. That was fun. I remember Paul George really stepped up in that series. And then in 2014 was another Pacers series, but the Heat won in 6. And then 2015 was that ugly 4-game sweep against the Hawks. So I guess by default it was 2012.
Yeah.
The closest one, I guess.
By default, but, you know, again, with all these things, it's just been, it hasn't, you know, it's a lot easier when you have other superstars with you.
Yeah, did you ever feel like the Pacers would beat the Heat in that series?
Either no. Way?
Neither?
No. Hmm. Again, you can't bet against the you know, three-headed monster.
Yeah,
it just, with Paul George and upstarts.
But if you look at him from year to year sequentially, it just looks like the distance is growing further. It feels like LeBron's teams are getting better, and the other teams are getting worse. Is that a good?
No, because he traded in two old veterans, superstars, mm-hmm. for two young superstars. So is it really his team's getting better, or just? Well, it would be a lot different if he didn't have Love, Irving,
but it's still LeBron's
Bosch
teams.
Wade.
It's still LeBron's teams. He's still running the show. It's still his baby.
He's running the show, but it's a lot different if you're running with a full garage as opposed to look at the Pacers with Paul George and no number two.
Yeah, well, in 2013-14, you can make the case he had a lot more help than – I'm talking about Paul George. You know, so, you know, you can make – even 2011, that Bulls team was a 60-win team. That was a really good team, you know. And the Boston team, you know the story. They were sort of rackety coming off the lockout. You know, they were a little older, but – they sort of clicked. They got a little lucky having to play the Sixers in the second round instead of the Bulls. And then in the conference finals, it just seemed like the Heat just had trouble closing them out because the Celtics had so much experience. And Rondo was awesome in that series. I remember he had didn't he have a 50-point game or like a 40-point game in game 2 in overtime?
Yeah, he had some crazy Rondo-esque stat, but
and then they choked game 5 and then LeBron had to take over to finish him off in game 6. Were you actually at any of those games?
No.
Okay.
No, I wasn't even here in New England at that time. So.
Yeah, so it's, you know, really fun. But, you know, long story short, don't bet against LeBron in the finals and never in the conference finals. In the finals, different story. But in the conference finals, it's LeBron's show and we're just sitting there watching it.
Pretty much. That's why, you know, it's just going to be, we'll wait till the finals in the East. The East has been, you know, thoroughly, for a super exciting regular season, a super tight one, the playoffs just sort of, everybody crapped out at the end.
Okay, and so we'll just kind of do a little bit of a rapid-fire segment as we close out. Are there any news and notes that you wanted to talk about? Maybe Dave Joerger going to the Kings and, you know, the a couple of other kind of surprising moves that you may have seen? You know,
I think we can save that for another full week. Once this madness, this coaching madness this season finally stops, because there's still a few holes left that need to be filled, but for the most part, a team is just sort of panicked.
Yeah. That's a good one, and we'll start with this one for our rapid-fire segment of chances are. What are the chances that we see a new head coach for any of these four teams that are in the conference finals? What are the chances?
None.
Not even Dwayne Casey?
I think they'll give him, you know, one more year for making it. You made it to the finals. There's not much else you can do.
Chances that LeBron goes for 40 in any of these games against the Raptors?
Minutes or points? Because I say
points.
Neither to both.
Points.
He's going to play 25 minutes. They're going to be up by like 25.
Wow, you're really like debasing. You're just throttling the Raptors right now.
There's nothing on the Raptors.
You liked the Raptors for so long, and then you just waited till this point in the season to bury them.
There's nothing you can do. You lose Valanciunas. You have no.
Well, he might be back. You know, we're not sure yet.
He might be back, but is he?
He's not 100%.
Exactly. So all they're going to do is just pick on him, and again, there's nothing you can do with just injuries, and that's just. Unfortunately, that's just the way it goes.
Chances we've seen the last of the Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan show in Toronto.
No, they'll both be back.
You think DeRozan will resign?
They're going to max him out.
Well, maxing him out would make sense to me. You know, even at regardless of the deficiencies in his game, that's a $25 million per year guy now. That's a guy that you need to keep. Absolutely. Would you agree there?
You know, there's deficiencies in his game, but not if you put people around him that, you know, might help him.
Who gets more triple-doubles in the Western Conference Finals in this series? Westbrook or Draymond Green? They both led the league in triple-doubles.
Westbrook, because turnovers count as well.
Okay, take turnovers out of the equation.
Draymond Green, probably.
I mean, Draymond Green had seven blocks. He got very close to a quadruple, I think. He had seven blocks in a game against Portland. Like, he's incredible. All right, what are the chances that Klay Thompson has higher point totals in a game than Steph Curry in this upcoming series?
50-50. It's very good. You know, one of them is going to, so it just takes who's going to be the hot one. Whoever is the first one to probably hit, you know, like four in a row, all right, you're going to be shooting threes all night, and, you know, we're just going to, I'll defer to you.
Did you think Curry's absence made the Warriors a little stronger in a ways?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not if you're relying on Sean Livingston to...
Yeah, but maybe it forced Klay Thompson to sort of play in isolation or maybe be more of a ball handler, and it helped him out a little bit in the postseason.
I didn't. You know, they just did what they needed to do.
I think that's going to be it for our chances. I don't know how many more we got really left here. I mean, I'm really looking forward to Golden State and Oklahoma City. I think in terms of just fun factor, I think it'll be a really, really fun series. But, you know, it's like in the 80s, everyone's like talks about, oh, man, look at the high-scoring teams in the 80s. Yeah, but a lot of those games, just because they were all scoring in the hundreds, they weren't always the funnest games. You know, there was everyone talks about the Lakers and the Celtics. There were a lot of games where the Celtics beat the Lakers by 20, and then the Lakers beat the Celtics by 20, and the games were not... They were fun to watch in terms of, like, the rapid-fire pace, but in terms of, like, the flow of the game, it wasn't always the funnest games. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, it was just that neither team was trying. It was just, let's just make, mm-hmm. you know, let's just see how close we get in the fourth quarter, and let's just all shoot. Nobody played defense, and
yeah,
it was like an all-star game.
That's the big difference, though, I think, in NBA teams now. In the fourth quarter, they're so much more efficient now, especially when they get down big. I mean, look at the Spurs in that last game. It was like, all of a sudden, they figured everything out. And the Thunder were just hanging on, it almost seemed like. So, you never really know how teams are going to react. But in the fourth quarter, teams are just so good at running their stuff, I always say, that they just it's almost like you're just trying to hang on to your lead, and so that because you lose momentum, and all of a sudden, it just turns into like a survival game. You know, it depends on the situation, too. You know, it depends on who you have, how well they're playing, whether or not they're in foul trouble, you know, injuries and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, it just seems like efficiency on offense just soar. It skyrockets down the stretch of games for the good teams. That's why it's surprising for me in that Toronto-Miami series, watching them kind of fucking step all over themselves. It was sad. I expected more.
Yeah, well, either way, whether they're good games or bad games, we'll still be watching.
So give me your finals prediction. I got a feeling that I know where you're going here.
It'll be Cavaliers and probably Warriors.
Oh, a rematch, huh?
Which we expected from the first, you know, week one.
I don't know. It was fascinating the first time anyway. Even when Kyrie Irving got hurt, you know, we're jumping ahead, obviously, here. And it was fascinating anyway because LeBron had to run the show by himself, but they got the series lead temporarily, you know, so it was almost like, oh, no. But I think there's actually more intrigue with this one. I think if that happens, I think there's more intrigue with this one. You've got a fully loaded Cavs team. You got a 73-9 Golden State Warriors team. And it would just be – we'll obviously talk about all this in the finals if it happens. But it's so LeBron – for LeBron to be like, you know what, I'm going to take the 73-9 magic carpet ride, and I'm going to shit all over it.
Pretty much.
It would be just so typical troll LeBron to do that. Oh, everybody hates me, huh? Well, then I'm going to be the great superstar that ruins the Warriors' dream season. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, he played the role of the villain in Miami, so it's nothing new to him.
Yeah, he can always turn it back on. He kind of is again, am I right? Mm-hmm. Especially with firing David Blatt. I felt like a lot of fans kind of turned on him after that.
Well, yeah, but we've discussed that enough, so.
All right, and that's going to be wrapping up this one. I hope everybody enjoyed it. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, everybody.